actually where we stand in life, in this time period of our life. And I mean, I guess I'll consider myself to be one of the two young ones, although I'm feeling older as the days go on. But we're definitely at a point where we can choose to do a lot of things right now. We can choose to serve, or we can choose to serve ourselves. We can choose to live godly lives, or we can choose to live lives that are out of selfishness for our own desires and our own lusts. And so very good thoughts there, and kind of did give me a little bit of a segue into the lesson that we'll be talking about here next, talking about the first fruits. And I'll start by telling you a story that a professor that I went to church with in college, Dr. Bullington. I don't know if any of you know the Bullingtons. He told me about one of his summer jobs when he was young, when he was, I believe, high school age. He used to pick peaches in the summer. He used to go, and when the peach crop came in, he was picking peaches, and it was, you know, as many as you could pick, and as many baskets as you could fill up, you received payment for those that you picked. And so the man that he worked for was a member of the church, and the first peaches that would come in at the beginning of the year, I forgot to mention one thing too. He said you could eat as many peaches as you wanted to. That was one of the perks of the job. You could just, as many peaches as you could eat while you're out there picking, you could just go for it. And he said, I love peaches, you know, so that was a good job for me. But he said the first peaches that came in, I can't remember what he called them, but it was a smaller peach, and it was a little more bitter than it was sweet. Just really didn't taste too good. And the guys that he picked peaches with, they didn't eat a whole lot of those peaches while they were picking them. They were just there for the money when it came to picking those peaches. But they were the very first ones of the season, and they were the favorite ones for the man that owned the business. Why do you think those peaches were his favorite peaches? That's a question for you to answer. Well, honestly, most people don't like them as much as regular peaches. They're just not quite as... Yeah. Okay, that's a good thought. Any other thoughts there? Okay. So something, when we say something's in season, right, that means that there's a time when it's out of season. And so when you get the first, that's payment. That was his first money that came in for his peach crop, right? And it was what was to come. It meant his living that was coming in. And so that's what I think of when I think of the first fruits. I think of the fact that those are what you've been waiting for. Do this fruit just happen? I mean, you know, it just comes up, and hey, if I want to be a one that harvests fruit or plants fruit, I don't have to do anything. It just comes up. He had to prepare the land. The planting had to be done in such a way that it was done at the right time. It had to be done spaced apart in a certain distance. The trees had to be pruned. All these things had to be done so that they would produce good fruit that he could sell. Right? He put a lot of work into this fruit. And when the first ones come back, that is his reward for his work. Now imagine if they said, okay, that first crop that you bring in, you don't get any money from that. You have to take that and you have to give it to somebody else. It no longer is quite as enjoyable to him because it's not that first payment, right? It's not what his family's been waiting on, surviving on other things or surviving on last year's crop until you can get to next year's crop. Let's read Leviticus 23, starting in verse 10. It's already been read once. We'll look at it again. Backing up to verse 9, it says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, When you enter the land which I am going to give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and you shall wave the sheaf before the Lord, and it will be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. That first fruit wasn't to be eaten by your family. It wasn't to be sold in the market. It was to be brought to the Lord. So if the children of Israel were willing to follow this law, this rule, what viewpoint did they have of God? What did they expect from God? Sorry, that's not a well-worded question. I'll answer my own question. They had to trust in the Lord, that it wasn't going to be the only, that it wasn't going to be the final, but that there would be more that would bless Him. And it's not that they just had to come up with this idea that, okay, well, if I give this up, you know, maybe God will like me and therefore I'll get more. God told them from the very beginning, when you follow my law, when you give that first fruit, you don't have to worry. I have promised you that I will bless you continually. So it required them to trust in the Lord that He would fulfill His promise, that He would hold to His word, that He would do as He said. Because is it within the power of God to do such a thing? I don't think that's a question, right? See, the things outside of nature, even beyond what nature holds, that God had done in the lives of the Israelites, the 10 plagues that defy the laws of nature. Could God keep His promise and bring forth a bountiful harvest each and every year? Of course He could. But they had to trust that He would do that. And sometimes we get, you know, these things are ours. I like what Danny was talking about, our rights. We kind of think, you know, if I work and I get it, then it's mine, right? I do with it what I wish. It should be mine. And especially when you get that first paycheck or whatever it may be, you want to hold on to that. It's mine. I get to do with it what I wish. Should we be giving our first fruits to the Lord? Should we be trusting in Him that He is going to bless us in the ways that He has? It's not just money. We focus on that a lot of times, and we'll talk about that a little bit this morning. But there are so many things in our lives that we cling to because we're not willing to give them to God as first fruits. And beyond that, it's not just the first fruits that He asked for right here. If we continue reading here in Leviticus chapter 23, starting in verse 12, it says, "Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb, 1 year old, without defect, for a burnt offering to the Lord." 1 year old male lamb, perfect, spotless, firstborn. It's not just the first, it's the best. Now, there's not a lot of room for error in either of those things. First, there is nothing but first, right? Two and three, it's only one. It's the only one. And best, there is only the best, and then everything is lower than that, right? He doesn't leave any room for guessing or questioning. You give the first, and you give the best. Now, that's old law. That's sacrifice, and that's, you know, law keeping, and you know we're not under that law anymore. I'm not so sure that we're not given the same principles throughout the law of liberty, throughout the life of Christ, in which He displays what it means to give of the first fruits. In fact, in just a little bit, we'll talk about the fact that we're called first fruits in the New Testament. That those that are brought to be with the Lord are a type of first fruits, it says. And so it is important that we ourselves see this as something that applies to us, as something that's very important to us. So in order to illustrate this idea of first fruits and the best, I want to turn over to Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14. the disciples continually were beside Christ. They saw what he did on the face of the earth. They saw his power and his authority. And if you asked anybody, what is Christ worth to you? Who do you think would be the ones that speak of and say everything? Okay? The disciples, Peter. I think Peter would be at the forefront of our minds. Because he says, when Jesus asks him, do you love me? Peter knows with all of his heart, yes, I love you, Lord. And it even hurts him that Jesus would ask the question, you know. Everything. You are worth anything and everything to us. But we don't see it in this story right here, right? Let's start in verse 1 of chapter 14. Now the Passover and unleavened bread were 2 days away, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to seize him by stealth and kill him. But they were saying, not during the festival, otherwise there might be a riot of the people. Verse 3, while he was in Bethany, at the home of Simon the leper, reclining at the table, there came a woman with an alabaster vial, a very costly perfume of pure nard, and she broke the vial, poured it over his head. But some were indignantly remarking to one another, why has this perfume been wasted? For this perfume might have been sold for over 300 denarii, and the money given to the poor. And they were scolding her. But Jesus said, let her alone. Why do you bother her? She has done a good deed to me. You always have the poor with you, and wherever you wish, whenever you wish, you can do good to them. But you do not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for the burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will be spoken of in memory of her. So we have an example here of Christ being in a home here in Bethany. It says, in the home of Simon the leper, and reclining at the table there. And this is soon before his death. And remember, his death was at a time when everything was rushed, right? They couldn't properly prepare the body for burial. That's why they come back on the third day when he's risen, because they're coming back to make better preparation for the body. And so leading up to this time, he's in the house with the disciples, which he is frequently doing here at the end of his times, because he's trying to teach them the things that they're going to take on after he has left them. He's trying to give them these examples and these understandings of what is to be taught. And when they're sitting there reclining at the table, it's kind of this odd thing happens, right? Woman comes in, and she's got something. And it's an alabaster vial of pure nard. It's a perfume and ointment, extremely expensive. How expensive is it? 300 denarii, or however you say that word. Somebody give me today's terms, maybe? Okay, so you're talking about like a year's worth of work. You know, so $30,000-$40,000, is that what we'd like to say? In our terms, you know, with our rich society at least. You talk about $30,000-$40,000? That's a lot of money. That's a whole year worth of what you've done. This isn't even just the first fruits. This is like all the fruits, right? 300 denarii. And what does she do when she comes in with it? I want you to see the very first thing she does before she can even pour it on his feet. She breaks it. She breaks it. Now, I have a feeling that if I came in with that, you know, important, expensive, possibly even a family heirloom that's been passed down, you can imagine that 300 denarii, it didn't come in some cheapo bottle either, right? This is probably expensive, looks expensive. You understand what this is. And I would probably be like, let me give you a few drops here, you know? You can imagine that the top on this was not, the hole in which the fluid came out was not very big, right? If anybody that's worn perfume or cologne or whatever, it's not like the ranch dressing spout, right? where you just, it's small because you're only supposed to use a little bit and it's expensive. You don't want a lot to come out. And so I can see myself, you know, let me get a little bit on you there. Put the stopper back in, put it back on the shelf. She comes up and she breaks the top off of it because that little hole is not big enough for her to get all of it onto the feet of Christ. That's what giving the best is. That's what giving the first is. It's breaking the flask. It's recognizing, I'm not even going to be able to use the jar that this came in anymore. But that instead, I'm going to knock the top off of it so that it can be given over to Christ. Now look at the comparison of mindsets that we have here, right? On one hand, we have this woman who's willing to give maybe even her most precious thing to the Lord. And what does she do with it? She anoints it over his head. Who is anointed in the Bible? What do we see? Kings, priests, and prophets. Prophets, priests, and kings. Those are the ones that we see anointed. She comes and she anoints the head of Christ. And her disciples, not her disciples, sorry, the disciples of Christ, what is their mindset? How do they see this? It's a waste. I honestly think if they stepped back and they looked at what they were saying, they would say, I can't believe I just said that. I know we on the outside looking in look at this and say, did they really just say that? I mean, think about the terms that we're talking about. You just wasted something expensive on Christ. He's not worth 300 denarii. Instead, what should have been done with it? It should have been sold and given to the poor. It looks a lot better. Could have accomplished a lot more if you had done this. Sold it and given it to the poor. Do we know the real reason why this was said? Okay, so yes. So as far as the selling and giving the money to the poor, it was because the money would go into the poor box or the keeping of the funds there, and Judas himself would pilfer from that. He wanted to keep some of those things for himself. We see the difference of attitudes here. One attitude says, I'm going to give the best thing that I have to Christ. And one attitude says, he's not worth that much. He's not worth me giving that to him. You could have done a lot more than that. What do we think about that first paycheck? Man, I'm gonna go get me a nice suit. I'm going to get me some good shoes. I'm going to get something so that I can do my job better so my next paycheck is bigger, right? What if the first paycheck never even touched our bank account? That's a foreign mindset to us because it's ours. But in reality, she says, this is not for me. This has been kept. This has been prepared for Christ. And it's an amazing and a wonderful thing because the disciples, these men, they're really coming at her. Trying to make her look foolish, wasteful. The things that she's done are just plain wrong. And who defends her? Can you imagine that is your defense? In my giving to Christ, in my desire to give all to Him and to serve Him, my defense is not my own words, it's Christ. And you can have no greater defense. Now, we do something that looks foolish to the world in giving up something that's expensive or important to us. Let me tell you, time will be the number one thing that we're going to talk about here in just a few minutes. Man, you're wasting some time. I can give no defense that in and of myself is this intelligent and amazing thing, but the words of Christ, that is my defense. And it stands up to everyone, whether they'll take it or not. Christ says, leave her alone. And what does he say is going to happen to this story? Is it going to be lost into oblivion? What's going to happen to this story? It's still happening right now, today. I'm telling you, I'm talking to you about this story. where this woman is remembered in the Gospels for having anointed Jesus before his burial, before his death. Can you imagine that that's what's happening whenever you're giving to the Lord? That it's something that he'll remember forever? It's not lost. It's not something that passes by. It's something that the Lord himself remembers. And especially in this instance, it's remembered by us as an example for us. The woman's name's not even given in Mark's account right here. It's not necessary. We remember what she did. We remember who she was for the fact that she gave of her best. So let's talk a little bit about some bests and some first fruits that we need to be giving. I mentioned time. I think time is extremely important. How much time? Just 1 second. How much time do we spend doing other things in this world? Things that we consider to be necessities. Schoolwork, work, TV, sports, surfing the internet. How much time do we spend doing those things? And how much time do we spend studying God's Word and meeting with the brethren and getting Bible studies together? How much time do we spend doing those things? It's pretty lopsided when you look at it. It's something where we do understand that everything we do, I knew I was going to do it, at least one. Everything we do in this world is a byproduct of the fact that we serve our Lord and Savior. But you can't say that if you don't ever spend time in His Word. And you can't say that if you don't want to meet with the saints. And you can't say that if your desire is not to have an understanding of who He is and what He has left for us to do. It's just not possible. And so time is one of those best things that needs to be given. And that's a modifier. It's not the last time. It's not the worst time. Talk about first fruits. When do we decide we're going to read our Bibles? Or when do we decide we're going to... Is it when we're tired? Is it when we're sleepy? Is it when, I got a few minutes. Let me get those few chapters in real quick. Oh, I got that done. Okay, good. Now I can go to my softball game. Whatever it may be. The first fruits is the time when you know, this is the time when I know I can really focus on what I'm studying here. This is the time when I know that if I have a Bible study, I'm going to reach the most people. And this is the place where it's going to be the most impactful. It's not just what kind of whatever can happen or whatever you can do. It's about giving the first and the best to be sure that that is what I'm giving over to the Lord. What are some other things that are first fruits or things that we should be giving the best of to the Lord? Doug, did you have one earlier? And we're oftentimes not willing to give mercy in the most needed places. We're pretty merciful on ourselves a lot of times when we mess up. Why don't we save that mercy for the best place? Why don't we save it for those that really need it, that struggle, and we don't give them the benefit of the doubt very often. What else? What are some other first fruits? What are some other of the best things that we need to be giving to the Lord? Okay, our dedications. Give me a little bit. And I think that's definitely one that we need to be mindful of. In Mark chapter 1, Jesus actually gets up before the sun rises and goes to a place where nobody is going to bother him so that he can spend time in prayer to his Father. And I think about, what did Jesus have to pray about? My prayers are consisting of, forgive me of my sins, healed those people that are sick, which Jesus did here on the face of the earth. You know, bless me with these things. These are all things that I don't really see Jesus praying for. But he spent so much more time praying than I do. And he saw it as more important to take a special time to be able to do that in which he could separate himself. That's a good thought. I'm going to tell you a couple of things that I have kind of struggled with maybe in different points in my life that I think I'm trying to learn how to give the first fruits in these ways. One of them is when I come to worship, that I come to worship. I have had many times troubles laying aside the things of this world to be able to come and to serve the Lord in the assembly. And it's not just because there's a lot going on in my life, but it's because I don't prepare to come to services sometimes. It seems like, you know, Saturday is a fun day, and so we find ourselves going to bed later on Saturday than we do any other night of the week. Or maybe Friday night and Saturday night. And then Sunday morning we wake up and, oh, man, it's tough. And I did this especially in college. Tough to wake up, get there, have no idea what was taught in the sermon that morning. No clue. Fighting going to sleep the whole time. Just proud that you didn't fall asleep during the service. And I eventually had to recognize you have to go to sleep early on Saturday night. Even if it's earlier than the rest of the nights that you go to sleep, you have to go to sleep early. I'm going to give up some time doing whatever those worthless things are that I think are so important to give my first fruits to go to sleep so that I can worship God correctly. And that's that idea of the best. I'm not giving worship that's mediocre, that's, you know, just I'm here, I'm doing it, but it's the best. It's giving those best things to the Lord. And it's not only that, but preparing my mind for what I'm going to be doing when I come together. If I have a Bible study if I have a Bible lesson for my class, and this is one that I'm bad about and I'm trying to get better about, do the Bible lesson. If you have a reading, if you know what it's going to be from, read the lesson and read it twice and read it three times so that maybe those things that you don't get, man, they really sink in whenever you get to class. And the discussion is so much more understandable to you because you know what's being talked about. I think we sometimes come in and we think, I'm just going to be fed, just give it to me. I don't have any prior interest in it until I get there, and then I want it to be given to me. You can't do that. It's not giving the best. It's not giving the first fruits. It's instead just worrying about ourselves. I want to spend my time doing what I want to do. One of the biggest things that I want to mention is our efforts. We're put on this earth, and we're receiving salvation from God. And we're not just kind of moseying through life. The Great Commission is not to have a good job and to get a good education. The Great Commission is to teach the world about Christ. And our efforts are placed in so many different places. And let me tell you, that final that you've got to take that is so important because it determines whether you get your degree or not. And that softball game that is the championship game that's so important, those things, we prepare for those things. And we seek out opportunities to get ready for those things. How much effort do we put in to teaching the gospel? How much effort do we put into showing those that are around us what it means to be living a life that is patterned after Christ? I think we do a bad job of that. I think that there are a lot of people that I meet that unless I just come tell them, they wouldn't know that I was a Christian. It's because I don't... It's not that I go and live this terrible life or live a worldly life. It's because I don't actively seek to teach. It's because I don't take opportunity. It's because I'm not giving myself in that way. my focus is so caught up in the things of this world, in doing good at my job, and in finishing my schoolwork, and in raising my child, in being a husband. And those things are great things. Those are good things. If she had sold this ointment, this perfume, and given it to the poor, would that not have been a good thing? But what needed to be done was that it was given to Christ, was that it prepared Him for His burial. And those good things that we think about in this world, they catch us up. I didn't even hit it that time. We get caught up in those things to such a point that we can't even give our best to the Lord. And so we need to be very careful. I'll say it again. Our efforts to teach the gospel, those need to be our greatest efforts. Our efforts to serve, those need to be our greatest efforts. Because that is what God has left for us to do. That's what Christ has told us to do as we're here on this earth. Let's look over at Mark chapter 10. Sometimes it's maybe a little bit hard to define first fruits or the best. Sometimes it's one of those things that you just really enjoy, right? Sometimes there are things that we really get caught up in this world that we strive after and we seek. And so I would say if you're wondering what you can give that's a first fruit, or what you should be giving, maybe, that's a first fruit, think about the rich young ruler. Think about the position that he had. Coming up in verse 17, it says, Mark chapter 10, he's setting out on a journey, a man ran up to him and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments: do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not defraud, honor your father and mother." He said to him, "Teacher, I have kept all these things from my youth up." Looking at him, Jesus felt a love for him and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go and sell all you possess, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." But at these words he was saddened, and he went away grieving, for he was one who owned much property. What mattered the most to the rich young ruler? His possessions. And he couldn't give it over, because that was what was ruling him. And I think oftentimes we read through this passage and we say, I'm glad God hadn't asked me to do that. I'm glad that there's not this commandment that says, sell all that you have and give it to the poor, because I just don't think I could do that. Well, if that's your attitude, that's what he's asking you to do. If you cannot give something up to serve God, that's the very thing you need to give up to serve God. Because if you ran up to him and said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus didn't ask him to give everything he had because he was a poor man. He asked him to give up everything he had because he knew that's what his crutch was. He knew that's what he wanted. He knew that's what he desired. He knew that's what he put first. And Jesus says, because of that, you need to sell this. And you need to give it to the poor, and you need to come follow me. You need to remove that thing that is keeping you from following me. And so that those things that can be given that we can't give, we just cling to them, we just hold on to them because they're so important to us. Those are the things that we need to be letting go of. Those are the things we need to be giving first and the most willing to give, because we recognize what control they have over us. Our time, if there were 36 hours in a day, we'd fill them up, right? 24 is just not enough. Time is precious. You never get it back. We cling to those minutes. We cling to that time. One more football game. One more video game. Shouldn't we be giving that first to God? Shouldn't that be the thing that we seek for an opportunity to give it over to the Lord? We have a budget, and budget. Nikki and I we have a budget as to what all we put here, there, and everywhere. How much for mortgage? How much for insurance? I don't know if it was by design or if it just happened, but the first thing is what we give to God. And I'm not bragging by saying that, but I really feel like if I don't have that mindset, if that's something that never changes, then that's something that I can't not give as a first fruit. I've heard people talk about in their family when times got tough, that didn't come off the budget first. That's not the thing that they took off the budget. The thing that they took off the budget was entertainment. And then they drove less so they could cut back on gas money. And then they wore their clothes a little bit longer because they weren't going to give up giving to the Lord, because that was the first fruit. That's the first thing. That's unchanging. And it's not, I think that's a great example, but it's not just money. We focus on that so much. It's time. It's efforts. It's our mindset. What's your mind given to first? Is your mind given over to the things of the world first? The things of Christ kind of come second? Is that second nature to think about the law of God, to think about the mercies and the compassion that He had? Or are we first on that eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth? Where's our mindset? Is it first given to God? I think what Jesus is trying to tell the rich young ruler right here is everything needs to be given over to God. And we're the same way. When we come to the cross for death, that death is a giving of everything. There's nothing that lacks in giving yourself to God. And anything that you have in this world is just service to Him. And anything that He blesses you with is something that you're using to praise His name and to bring glory to Him. That's all I have for this morning. Thank you for your patience, and just hope that we can kind of repurpose the way we think about giving ourselves back to the Lord and giving those first fruits to Him. Thank you for your attention.